Chapter 13. Incarnadine. Stormlost. Voices in the Void. 1301-12. As Argyltal spoke the code, acidic saliva stung the underside of his tongue. 1301-12. The 12th world, to be brought to compliance by the 1301st Expeditionary Fleet. "Of the 7 worlds we conquered in 3 years," he said, "this was the most painful." Lorgar did not disagree. "And yet," the Primarch said, "it was also bloodless. Not a shot fired in anger, nor a blade drawn in rage. The pain was born of revelation."
3 years, sire," said Argyltal, looking away from his father's eyes. 3 years and 7 worlds. History will point to those worlds, the husks we left, and describe how the 17th Legion vented its wrath in the wake of our failure. World after world burned, the populations butchered to slake our fury."
Lorgar's smile was pyrite false.
"Is that how you see our pilgrimage?" "No, never. But 7 worlds died in fire, and we were almost destroyed after leaving the 8th.
Lorgar's grey gaze didn't waver for a moment. He was seeing with his 6th sense, looking into his son's heart, and sensing the 2nd soul gestating there.
"Enough of this maudlin remembrance," Lorgar's tone betrayed his impatience. "Speak of the world we found." "Do you remember," Argyltal asked him, "when we first reached orbit?"
The floor was trembling in a most specific way. Xenu 73 processed this. Beneath his metal feet, the rumble of the ship's deck had a very particular pulse. Neither the arrhythmic flow of warp flight nor the heartbeat tremor of sustained guidance thrust. Instead, murmurs coursed through his artificial bones, faint, but blessedly metronomic.
Orbit. Orbit at last.
The last journey had been a long one. Xenu 73 wasn't a being given to indulging in speculation beyond the present, but his calculated projections were grim. The warp storms battering the fleet would certainly have claimed more than the 3 ships they'd already taken had the 1301st pressed on even farther past this world. Xenu 73 had heard one of his menials tell another that the storm outside was hurling itself at the ship's shields, and he'd berated the worker for grafting human attributes onto an inappropriate subject. Such anthropomorphosis would harm the servant's chances for future elevation within the Mechanicum. It was a violent storm, no doubt there, but there existed no passion, no anger, no intent in the warp's tides. Elsewhere on De Profundis, the decks were alive with activity as Astartes and human crew made ready for planetfall. Xenu 37 was largely immune to the brain chemistry necessary to feel excitement, having re-engineered himself beyond such sensation. Instead, he focused entirely on his work, which stimulated the pleasure centers of his brain, a minute amount for each subroutine performed with absolute accuracy and ergonomic efficiency. His fingers, 15 of them spread across 3 mechanical hands, worked in the armored bowl of Alizarin's skull. It was a process of reconstructing globs of bioplastic, each one dripping with nutrient-rich juices within the robot's head. Each tract of spherical relay globes needed to be fixed and sealed into position, then connected to the slave systems they controlled, as well as the fail-safes they relied on in incidents of battle damage. Such were the workings of the robotic mind, an intelligence in mimicry of life grown in a gene lab to be used in a machine body. The smell, rising from this bowl of artificial cerebrospinal fluid, was a revoltingly spicy reek, reminiscent of rotting onions. But of course, Xenu 73 had taken himself beyond the capacity to react to that as well. He only knew of the smell at all because his perspective sensors streamed data into his retinas, describing the stench in bland screeds of binary. Despite the intricacies of his task, Xenu 73 reserved a median 5% of his focus to monitor his surroundings. Internal sensor arrays, perceiving the world through echolocation, first tracked the door to his workshop opening, then the movement of a figure traversing the chamber. The figure,
emitted an unmistakable power signature. Armor, Mark III, Astartes. Several other signals joined the first, 5 Astartes in total. These details flashed up as runic symbols on Xenu-73's vision display. He paid them little heed, knuckle-deep as he was in organic slime, plugging tiny interface feeds into segmented spheres of bioplastic. Each sphere was a part of the Cortex program. Each fiber-optic link simulated synapses. The Astartes had the good grace not to interrupt. They waited the 3.32 minutes until Xenu-73 had finished the current phase of ministrations. A satisfaction pulse wormed through Xenu's data core. Dampened pleasure receptors fired. Work was complete. At last, the Mechanicum adept turned from the workshop table. Ooze dripped from his 15 metal fingers. "Sub, Commander," he said, neither acknowledging the senior sergeants at Argyltal's side nor offering the kind of respectful bow usually given by mortal members of the crew. "You are present to commence preparations on Incarnadine." Argyltal was armoured for the coming planetfall, as were the officers with him. Zaphon, clad in black, Dagatol, Malnor and Torgal, all wearing the Legion's granite grey. "It is time," said Argyltal. Xenu's 3 lens eyes took a few seconds to refocus. "This way," the adept replied. The warriors followed the machine priest into the red-lit chamber beyond. It wasn't that Xenu-73 felt any shame in Incarnadine's induction into the Word-Bearer's Legion. Such an honour was tantamount to the highest accolades in the Legio Cybernetica and evidence of the commanding adept's mastery. Such a machine clearly had a spirit of fierce intensity and was worthy of recognition. It was just that since the induction into the serrated sun, since the chapter's sigil had been etched onto the robot's forehead, the Conqueror Primus of 9th Maniple was a touch more erratic. The machine's spirit had the error-laden propensity to act unpredictably, and that was unacceptable. Even to a veteran adept like Xenu-73, this made no sense outside of his deepest, darkest suspicions. He'd run several hundred diagnostics, as was his meticulous duty, but the discrepancies, the flaws, the aberrations, in Incarnadine's cortex would resurface after each maintenance. On one occasion, never to be repeated, Xenu-73 had taken the greatest, gravest risk, purging Incarnadine's bioplastic brain. After flushing every trace of matter from the robot's skull bowl, he rebuilt the cortex over the space of 4 months, using spare parts, ritually cleansed after being taken from his supply caches. The robot had a new brain, for cog's sake, and still, it was... Well, there was another problem. The Martian code tongue lacked adequate description to summate the problem. Xenu-73 had ventured that the closest human term to describe the situation was that his Conqueror Primus was glitched. He considered this a symptom of his assignment, not just to the 1301st's expeditionary fleet, but to the Word-Bearer's Legion itself. The war machines and expert technical crews of Carthage cohort were spread across the many Word-Bearer's fleets rather than housed on their own Mechanicum vessels the way the Titan Legions were. Lorgar's own insistence made it thus. Decades before, when the Legio Cybernetica had first approached the Word-Bearer Lord, Lorgar had generously offered to modify his vessels to accommodate the specialist needs of his new Mechanicum allies. "We are all brothers under the same god's gaze," he'd said to the Fabricator General during his first visit to the surface of Mars. Apparently, a concordance was reached soon after. The Carthage cohort, one of Cybernetica's proudest armies, would march with the 17th Legion and dwell in the bowels of their vessels. Xenu-73 had not been present at the time this ancient oath was sworn, had not even been fleshborn back then, and this contributed to his doubts about the tale's veracity. The reason it never cogitated as pure truth to Xenu's perceptions was simple. Despite how useful the Carthage cohort was to the Word-Bearer's Legion, the Astartes simply did not like the Mechanicum element in their midst. Relations were closer to cold than cordial, even taking the Mechanicum's inhumanity into consideration. It was said other legions worked more harmoniously with the Martian Cybernetica cult, especially the Blessed Iron Hands and Unbreakable Iron Warriors, both of whom enjoyed the Mechanicum's immense and immensely valuable respect from the first days their forces joined together in the Terran Emperor's Crusade. But over time, Xenu 73, who had most humbly risen to oversee a maniple of four robots, came to realize that the Wordbearers were not like their Astartes brothers. It was an opinion shared by others of his rank on those increasingly rare occasions he established contact with them. As the fleets moved farther and farther apart since the last grand gathering at Colchis 3 years before, so too did contact between the Carthage maniples wane. Vox signals would never reach across such distances. Even astropathy was rumored to be becoming unreliable. Not that Xenu 73 had access to such a talent. Xenu 73's principal problem, where the Wordbearers were concerned, was their fundamental organic nature. In short, they were too human. They valued the flawed aspects of faith, focusing on the flesh and the soul rather than transcendence through oneness with a machine god. They were fueled by emotion rather than logic, which affected their tactical decisions and their very goals in the Great Crusade. Most tellingly of all, many of the Serrated Sun's warriors seemed uncomfortable around the Mechanicum adepts themselves, as if forever on the edge of voicing some accusation or framing a grievous complaint. Too human, that was the problem. Too emotional, too driven by instinctive faith and eloquent diction, too human, resulting in distance between the factions. The exceptions to this distance was a source of disquiet for Xenu 73, because the exception was his own conqueror Primus. In Carnadine, blessings upon its brave soul, was sincerely respected by the Wordbearers. Indeed, they called it brother. He led the Astartes into the preparatory chamber where his wards were undergoing the final rituals before reawakening. The three armored machines stood in impassive silence, doted on by Mechanicum menials, all under Xenu 73's command. Two of the robed attendants were lifting Vermilion's back-mounted las cannon, hefting it up along its greased runner track, testing the smoothness of motion as they brought it up to the firing position on the cataphract's shoulder. Sanguine, the gangly Crusader-class twin to Alizarin, was almost ready. The juddering clank of autoloaders filled the chamber as its shoulder cannon was fed fresh stores of ammunition. Servitors oiled its joints, only allowed near the war machine now that the vital work was complete. Incarnadine was waiting for them. That fact brought a stab of irritatingly human unease to Xenu 73's thought processes. The robot's combat wetware was about to be installed, and then Incarnadine would be ready for deployment. But there it was, the anomalous reading in its brain patterns. An attention spike in the otherwise flatlining rumble of its cognition. This flare of perception, along with the faintest adjustment of its visual receptors, only ever occurred in the presence of Wordbearers. Like an animal instinctively recognizing its kin, Incarnadine knew when warriors of the 17th Legion were near. This was why Xenu 73's pride was tainted. The robot's cortex shouldn't have allowed for this level of recognition without its combat wetware installed. It shouldn't be able to distinguish between targets and non-targets, seeing no difference between Astartes, human soldiers, aliens, or anything else. In fact, it shouldn't be able to perceive anything at all beyond the presence of walls and floors with a simple operational understanding not to crash into anything. And yet, the robot had been waiting for this moment. Xenu 73 tracked the glitch in Incarnadine's sensors as the Conqueror Primus recognized the Wordbearers before it. "Incarnadine," said Argel-Tal, and the voice broke the adept's scrambled line of reasoning. The subcommander wore no helm, and Xenu 73 saw the Astartes looking up at the towering machine. With no small reverence, the warrior unrolled a scroll of parchment and began to read. "As a warrior of the 17th Legio Astartes, the bearers of the word, a brotherhood born of Colchis and born of Terra, do you swear to fight in the name of Lorgar, heart and soul, body and blood, until the world below, designated 13019, is brought to lawful compliance with the Imperium of Man." Incarnadine stood in silence. Argyltal smiled and didn't look away.
"Incarnadine," said Xenu-73 from his position to the side, "swears the oath as it is written."
The Astartes continued as if the adept wasn't even there. "Incarnadine, your oath of moment is witnessed by your brothers.
Dagatal,
Torgal,
Melnor,
Zephon.
And affirmed by myself, Argyltal, sub-commander of the Serrated Sun." The captain affixed the scroll to the Incarnadine's armor plating, mounting it on the hooks designed especially for this use. All five of the Astartes wore similar scrolls attached to their shoulder guards. Xenu-73's pride warred with his unfading irritation. Praise to the Omnisire for the blessing of his own conqueror Primus being accepted into an Astartes legion's ranks, but curse the influence such a loyalty was having on its cortex. The ritual completed, the Astartes saluted with their fists over their primary hearts and made their way from the chamber. There had been a time when the warriors would have made the sign of the Aquila, but Xenu-73 hadn't seen them perform the Imperial salute since the Legion's shaming 3 years before. In the red-lit gloom of the chamber, the adept focused his tri-lens gaze on the hulking form of his favoured ward.
"Where do your loyalties lie, I wonder?"
Incarnadine didn't answer. It stood as it had for hours now, silently awaiting the next battle. The ship shook again. Even in orbit, the void around this new world was rich with warp energies, and occasional pulses of force brushed the ship's skin. Xenu-73 had also stripped his brain function to deplete the fantastical outreaching of his human imagination, and yet the squealing of the storm against the hull sounded like claws. He filed the sound in his lobe archives and went about his duties, only occasionally disturbed by the sound of nails clawing at the metal hull. The Blessed Lady needed to put some clothes on. She reached blindly over the edge of her bed, her hand patting the floor, questing until she found her robe. Cyrene was slipping the garment over her head when she felt Arik's arms encircling her from behind.
"It's still early," he said,
breathing the words against her neck.
"Actually, I think you're already late. That wasn't the dawn chime, it was the signal for noon."
"Don't joke,"
he said, pulling her closer.
"I'm not joking."
Cyrene ran her fingers through her hair, ignoring his as they quested over her.
"Arik," she said, "I'm really not joking."
He rolled out of bed with an, "Oh, shit," before repeating the curse a number of times in various languages. Being in love with an officer could at times be an educational experience, especially ones that could swear in 18 Gothic dialects.
"Shit!"
He finished the tirade back where he started.
"I have to go. Where the hell is my sabre?"
She faced him without seeing him.
"I think it slid under the bed. I heard it scrape on the floor last night."
"Where would I be without you?"
Arik dragged the blade out from beneath the bed and fastened the leather belt around his crumpled, unbuttoned uniform.
"I'll be back later," he said.
"I know."
"Planet fall today,"
he said, as if it would somehow be news to her. The ship quivered around them, and she reached out to the wall, steadying herself.
"I know,"
she said.
"Though with this storm..."
"I know,"
she said again.
"How do I look?"
He spoke the words with a grin, always enjoying this oldest of rituals between them. Usually she smiled back. Not this time.
"Like someone who is late for a meeting with Fleet Command. Now go."
Argyltal nodded to Major Jesmatine as the human officer half tumbled through the closing doors.
"I'm here," he called out. "I made it."
His ochre uniform, marking him as a senior commander in the 54th Yukar Infantry, wouldn't pass muster on a parade ground without some serious tidying up first. His black hair was in a similar state, and he'd not shaved this morning either. He regarded the others gathered in the briefing room, where they all stood around an expansive central table. 40 men, women, and Astartes, the latter he smirkingly liked to call post-humans, turned to regard him in turn. Above them, the chamber's illumination globes flickered as the ship shuddered again.
"Sorry," said the Major, "I'm here now."
Several heads shook, while irritated mutters broke out. The officer took one of the few places left at the table, next to a word-bearer captain. The charged hum from the warrior's armor joints was ear-achingly loud up close. It made it a chore to hear the others' voices.
"Good of you to join us, Eric,"
Fleet Commander Balak Torvus said, scowling down the table at the breathless major.
"As I was saying..."
"My apologies," the major interrupted again. "The servitors on D-Deck are struggling with the elevator gyrocogs. Something of a nightmare, really. Had to run the long way."
From across the chamber, the armored figure of Chapter Master Dumos thudded a fist onto the table.
"Be quiet, you fool,"
he grunted.
"Sorry, sir,"
Arik saluted, the pre-crusade fist over his chest, rather than the Aquila. Xenu 73 turned his hooded head with a rattle of grinding gears.
"There is no component in the ship's construction matching the term gyrocog," he noted.
Arik narrowed his eyes at the tech adept. "Thanks for that."
"I am aware," the word-bearer lord growled, "that Major Jesmatine was lying through his teeth with very little skill. Torvus, get on with the details. We have a world to bring to compliance."
Torvus began his summary, detailing land masses, population projections, and the disposition of forces. The people of 1301-12 were primitives, yet the entire expeditionary fleet was preparing for war. Army contingent, Astartes companies, Mechanicum forces, everything. It all depended on first contact. Arik listened to the things he'd already studied in the official reports. He caught the word-bearer captain next to him, glancing down.
"Did you comb your hair with your fingers?" Argaltal asked.
The door slid open before Arik could reply, but the retort would have been a rude one. Clad in ceremonial armor of chainmail and a breastplate of carved ivory, the Primarch entered the war room.
"My friends, please accept the sincerest apologies for my untimely arrival."
Lorgar favored them all with a beatific smile before taking his place at the head of the table.
"I trust all is in readiness for planetfall."
The gathered commanders assured him that it was. Resplendent in the ceremonial armor of a Covenant warlord, Lorgar listened to the reports in turn.
"Sire,"
one said at the conclusion.
"Speak, Argaltal."
"One matter still troubles me."
"It has been 3 weeks now," the captain said, ignoring the mutters that started up. "Where is the unending reverence?"
Lorgar rested his golden hands on the central table, leaning forward. All present could see in his eyes how much the words cost him.
"It is storm lost. We will mourn the crew and our brothers on board, but it is folly to hold out hope any longer."
"Sire,"
Argaltal was far from placated,
"we will not even search for them. One vessel storm lost is a tragedy, but three... Aurelian, please. The expedition is threatened. We must seek them."
"How? In the warp?"
Another judder gripped the ship, this one lasting several moments. Lorgar smiled a downcast little smile, no doubt amused at the timing of the ship's renewed trembling.
"Even the aftershocks of this storm are savage. You wish to dive back into the warp to hunt three atoms in a whirlwind?"
"I call again for the astropaths to make the attempt," said Argaltal. "If they can find their counterparts on the Reverence..."
"My son,"
Lorgar shook his head,
"your compassion does you great credit.
But we cannot halt the pilgrimage on account of one lost warship. The warp is a cruel mistress. How many vessels has the Imperium lost in its tides over the course of the Great Crusade? Hundreds? Perhaps even 1,000 or more."
Major Arik tapped a few buttons on his own data slate.
"We're on the frontier, and we all know it. Reinforcements aren't coming our way, no matter how loud we shout for help. How regularly are we receiving word from the other fleets now?"
"The time between contacts is rising exponentially," said 544. "The last astropathic transmissions from Lord Corfiran's main fleet was 4 months ago."
Zaphon spoke up now. "The first captain's last message contained updated star charts showing the Legion's expansion to the Galactic Rim, and a list of compliances achieved. It also contained the sincerest gratitude for the 8,000 more words and 3 picked references to be added to their fleet's copies of the Book of Lorgar." The Primarch chuckled, but said nothing. Zaphon continued,
"The closest Imperial expedition to us is the 3,855th,
almost a year's warp flight distant. What chapters lead the 3,855th? Asked Deimos.
The Blooded Visage, 544 continued, and the Crescent Moon, and Chaplain Zafen is incorrect. The 3,855th Expeditionary Fleet is between 13 and 15 months distant, depending on the vagaries of the warp.
Silence fell.
A year, said Lorgar. How far we have come to serve as humanity's eyes in the dark. No other Imperials have spread themselves this far apart, nor travelled this far from Terra and its conquered territories.
A year. Argeltal was struck by the distance put into such terms. We are over a year's flight distant from our nearest brothers, and even farther from the Imperium's true edge.
So we're well and truly alone,
Arik echoed the captain's thoughts, and the ship punctuated his words with another savage tremor.
Sire, Argeltal began.
Peace, my son, the Primarch cut him off with a gentle lift of his hand. Master Delvia, can you offer Captain Argeltal the solace he seeks?
The Master of Astropaths was a watery-eyed rake of a man, clad in a robe of colourless grey that hung off his shoulders in velvet waves. He regarded the room with a kicked dog's expression as he realised more and more faces were turning his way.
Our auguries are, that is to say, our senses are. I can hear the world we move towards. It's difficult to put into words.
Lorgar cleared his throat to draw the man's attention.
Master Delvia?
My lord,
the man asked in his whispery voice.
You are among equals here. Friends, we all sympathise with the pressures the storm has placed upon you. Do not be nervous or hesitant in explaining the details.
Shosar Delvia, Master of Astropaths, bowed without much in the way of grace, but it was sincere. Lorgar returned the bow, not to the same depth, but with a smile.
Sometimes, the Astropath began slowly, mere chance is enough to bring an Imperial fleet to one of humanity's lost worlds. Blessed are those occasions. More often, we rely upon the few ancient star charts that endured the chaos of Long Night and the Unification Wars that ravaged Terra. But when you rely upon us, when you call upon the Astropathic Choir, I will explain it as best I can.
That, Argeltal watched his father writing the words down, was the first moment my blood ran cold. Anchored above the world, when the Astropath told us how his kind saw through the storm.
Lorgar nodded.
It was the moment I first knew we were reaching the end of the pilgrimage, he said.
There's truth in that, the captain sighed.
No longer did their eyes meet as Argeltal spoke. The delicate scratching of a feather quill on parchment provided the only accompaniment to Argeltal's spoken words. The Master of Astropaths only hesitated for a moment.
We hear voices in the void, he said. A world is a hive of sound, the buzzing of locusts or flies, but far, far in the distance. It is never easy to make out one world in the endless reaches of space. The Imperium is an ocean of silence, and only the most intense focus allows us to hear the hum of human sentience. Imagine yourselves beneath the water of a great sea. All sound is muted, while the silence is powerfully oppressive. Now try to listen for voices in the nothingness, when all you can hear is your own heartbeat.
Sire, Deimos interrupted, must we listen to this crude prose?
Lorgar's answer was to press a golden finger to his smile.
Let Master Delvia speak. I find his words enlightening.
The Astropath pressed on, avoiding any of their gazes.
If you focus too hard on listening for voices, you will forget to swim. You'll drown. If you devote all your energy to swimming for the surface and breathing once more, you will hear none of the ocean's sounds.
You strive for balance, said Argeltal. That does not sound easy.
It is not, but no soul in this room can lay claim to an easy existence.
The Astropath offered a respectful bow to the gathered warriors. Several acknowledged his respect with a salute. Argyll-Tarl was one of them. He liked the scrawny little man.
"What has changed?" the captain asked. He felt the Primarch's eyes upon him.
"This region of space is like no other we've seen in our travels. The warp is savage, and our ships are slaves to raging tides of etheric energies."
"We have all seen warp storms before," said Lorgar. The glint in his grey eyes spoke volumes. He knew all of this and was leading the astropath on, letting the psychic sensitive explain it to the fleet's commanders.
"This is different, sire. This storm has a voice, a million voices."
It was safe to say he had the council's attention. Argyll-Tarl tasted poison as he swallowed. On a whim, he keyed in an activation code onto the table's hololithic projector. In flickering imagery, the region of space, zoomed out to display hundreds of suns and their systems, was beamed above the central table. It was impossible to miss what was wrong.
"This region here," the astropath gestured. "If the choir closes its eyes and reaches out with its secret senses, all we hear is screaming."
The area was vast, bigger than vast. It covered hundreds upon hundreds of solar systems, ugly even on the hololithic. The warp anomaly showed as a gaseous fog staining the stars, coiling down to a center of roiling, boiling energy.
"When you all look at this," said Arik Jesmatine, "does anyone else see an eye? An eye in space?"
Many agreed. Lorgar did not.
"No," the Primarch said. "I see a genesis. This is how galaxies appear when they are born. My brother Magnus showed me such things in the Hall of Leng on Fair Terra. The difference is that this birth is not physical. This is the ghost of a galaxy. You all see an eye or a spiral. Both are right, both are wrong. This is the psychic imprint of some incredible stellar event. It was powerful enough to rip the void apart, letting warp space bleed into the corporeal galaxy."
The astropath nodded, awed gratitude in his eyes as the Primarch spoke the words he lacked himself.
"This is what we believe, sire. This is not merely a warp storm. This is the warp storm, and it has raged for so long that it now saturates physical reality. The entire region is both space and unspace, warp and reality, all at once."
"Something," Lorgar stared at the bruised heavens, his gaze distant. "This is an abortion. Something was almost born here."
Argyll-Tarl cleared his throat.
"Sire, it is nothing, my son, just a fleeting thought. Please continue, Master Delvir."
The astropath had little more to say.
"The storms that have racked our journeys these last weeks emanate from this region, around 1301-12. Space is relatively stable. But think of the storm we endure to reach this point of stability. That storm blankets thousands of star systems around us. If we break from this narrow corridor, the energies playing out would be..."
He trailed off. Lorgar looked at him sharply.
"Speak," the Primarch commanded.
"An old Terran term, sire. I would have said the storm is apocalyptic."
"What does that mean?" asked Argyll-Tarl.
It was Zaphon that answered. "Damnation. The end of everything. A very, very old legend."
The thought seemed to amuse him.
"If the storm is nothing but screaming," Argyll-Tarl turned to Delvir, "then how did we find this world? How could you hear the life upon it?"
The astropath took a trembling breath.
"Because something on the world below us screams even louder."
"Something," the captain said. "You did not say someone."
The robed man nodded.
"Do not ask me to explain, for I cannot. It sounds human, but it is not. The way you would hear another warrior's accent and know him to be from another part of your home world, the astropathic choir hears something inhuman screaming in human tongues."
Lorgar cut off the discussion with a motion of his hand.
"This region is unmapped and unnamed. What vessels were lost in the journey through the storm?
544 answered before the fleetmaster could.
The unending reverence, the Gregorian, and the shield of Scarus.
The word-bearers present inclined their heads in respect. The shield had been the strike cruiser of their own Captain Scarus and his 52nd company. Their loss was a savage blow to the serrated sun, finding itself at two-thirds strength purely by the warp's fickle winds.
Very well, said Lorgar. Ensure all stellar cartography is updated, with records sent back to Terra. This region is hereafter known as Scarus Sector.
Will we make planet fall, sire?
This from Deumos. With infinite care, the Primarch took a rolled parchment from a wooden tube at his belt. He unrolled it with a precious lack of haste, and finally turned it to face them all. On the papyrus scroll, a spiraling stain was sketched in charcoal. Everyone recognized it immediately. It was already before them. The stain across the stars. As the commanders watched, a vicious shiver ran through the ship. Emergency lighting stained all vision red for several seconds, and the hololithic winked out of existence. Argyltal re-keyed the activation code as the lights returned. The image flared back into jagged, unreliable life.
Bitch of a storm,
Major Jesmatine muttered. A few quiet agreements were all the response he got.
This is drawn from memory, said Lorgar, meeting their eyes in turn. But my word-bearers will recognize it.
The Empyrean, the Legion officer said at once. The Gate of Heaven, Zaphon amended. From the old scrolls.
We were summoned here,
Lorgar said, his voice low and clear and unbroken by doubt's shadow. Something called out to our astropathic choir through the storm.
Something wanted us here, and something awaits us on the planet below.
The astropath broke decorum, possibly for the first time in his quiet and sheltered life.
How can you know that?
He stammered the words through pale lips. Lorgar let the scroll fall onto the table. Something like anger burned behind his eyes.
Because I hear the screaming too. And it is not wordless. Something on the world beneath us is crying out my name into the psychic storm.